This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Copper Reserve. Please drink responsibly.
They're going to run and get that boost.
This game's still alive and the Hawks have a first down.
Who wants to talk football?
It's Ronnie Wingo, number 20. Touchdown, Arkansas.
They talk the bar.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
When March starts up, warmer weather starts happening. But no, I saw that this weekend, there's a chance of snow.
So, well, and I'm in Hot Springs where it was 60 degrees at 9 o'clock last night. But I was talking to someone who was in Bentonville, and they were having to scrape sleet and snow and freezing rain off their windshield. So I guess it depends on what part of the state you're in this morning, what you're waking up to.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing is that it seems like it's so different because, for instance, I'm having to head to Fayetteville on Saturday, and I'm going to stay the night there. But on Sunday in Fayetteville, it's going to be like a high of 27. But then down here in Fort Smith in the River Valley area, it's going to be like a high of 40. So, yeah. I mean, it's just so no matter what part of the state you're in, it seems like it's always going to be different. So, but either way, I think we all can agree it's just going to be cold. But, man, I think we're all ready for the spring weather, and it's just crazy that we're already 2 months down in 2019. Is it true that the older you get, the faster time goes? Because I'm starting to realize that.
I mean, yes, there's no question.
I mean, it's just unreal how it's 2019, for one, and that we're already 2 months into 2019. There's only 10 months left. Spring practice is going to be starting, which we're going to talk a lot about today. Basketball is about to come to an end. Baseball is going to be, and it's just like, before we know it, it's going to be SEC Media Days. And then before we know that, fall camp starting. I mean, it just keeps like it's just moving right along. And I think it's just the older I get because, man, it seemed like time stood still when I was a kid, when I was younger than that. But either way, there's going to be a lot of things that we are going to want to talk about this morning. Obviously, I want to really hammer spring practice because right now, obviously, the basketball team is getting ready for Ole Miss on Saturday, which I want to talk about that game last night. Hopefully, you saw the ending of that Ole Miss-Tennessee game, Tommy, because there was some outrage, needless to say, in that. Did you get the chance to watch it or at least some highlights of it?
I got some Twitter messages about it. I will pull the video up. I had a late night last night, but no, I have not seen the end of that, but I will do that right now. I've got this computer thing that's got Google on it.
Okay, so good. Yeah, the Google machine, because there was some officiating questions that people had in that game.
Yeah,
so much so that Ole Miss fans were throwing things onto the court at the end of the game.
Yeah, Tennessee wins the game. I saw, I was getting some stuff about this. So tell me what happened.
So essentially, Tennessee hit a go-ahead basket to go up. They had a one-point lead. And I think there's about 5 or 6 seconds left. So plenty of time for Ole Miss to drive down the court. Well, Ole Miss gets the ball. They pass it in. They drive down the court. It's all in a rush. And this guy tries to heave a three, pretty deep three for Ole Miss. Well, the Tennessee guy stood in front of him and took a charge. And the referees called it a charge. And people lost their ever. Kermit Davis took off of his coat, which looked like he had just got out of the shower because of how bad he is sweating. That is disgusting. I mean, there's sweat. There's just moisture all over his shirt. He throws his sport coat. He is screaming expletives that they would call a charge in that situation. And the reason I'm wanting you to look at it, Tommy, is because, of course, we know you're official. So we need you to decide and help us decide if that was truly a charge or was that a blocking foul, because it's got to be one or the other.
Let me ask you something, and I've got the video pulled up here. I'm running through some highlights. So who created the – was the defender legal, number one, and did the offensive player create the contact? What did you see on the play?
I mean,
the untrained eye, what did you see?
From the untrained eye, what I saw is I saw a charge, I felt like.
Because I'm looking at it, and it looks to me like an easy call.
Yeah, that's how
I felt. It looks to me like the defender is legal, and who created the contact?
Yeah.
The offensive player.
Yep.
And the offensive player's intent was to what? Trying to draw a foul.
Yeah.
And in the end, he's the one that created the contact on a legal defender. So why would you penalize a legal defender?
Yeah. Hey, I'm with you. I just wanted to get confirmation on my belief because that's okay. Why I was throwing it to you, because I agree with you. I think that was a charge.
He's 6 feet out in front of the top of the key here. I'm watching the play as we speak. The offensive player is driving forward up the floor. Tell me, one thing I always ask when looking at it, what did the defender do wrong?
Nothing.
Tell me what, because he's entitled to a spot by rule. Every player is entitled to a spot on the floor. He had that spot. He was there. Doesn't matter which end of the floor it's on, right?
No. Nope.
He's standing there, and the offensive player runs him over. Now, it's 6 feet above the top of the key or 6 feet deep in the paint. Does it matter?
Nope.
Nope. Why is that play any different right there at the end of the Tennessee-Ole Miss game than it would be right above the restricted arc area? Now, the arc in the paint changes everything by rule, so take the arc out of it underneath the basket. But I'm looking at this play right here, and to me, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah. Well, see, that was the thing is when I saw it, I was like, okay, that's a good call. But I think it was pretty incredible that the Tennessee player had the audacity to do that, because how often do you see a player, especially when there was not coming out of a timeout? I mean, you just hit a basket and the other team was running down the court. There's no time to think about things. And he just stood right there that far away from that. Like, that took – I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I mean, that just was an incredible play by him, because how often do you see a player try to take a charge that far away from the goal in a situation like that where the time's running out? I mean, you just never see that.
Was he trying to take a charge, or did it just work out that way? I don't know.
I don't know.
He was standing there, and he was in good legal guarding position, and all of the contacts created by the offensive player who goes airborne and comes down and goes – through the player, through the defender. So, to me, I don't know how you would – what else would you call there?
You had to call something in, I think.
Just honestly, what are your options there? Yeah. I mean, it cannot be a block. How would you call a block on that play?
Yeah. No, I think the right call was made. I do.
It's too much contact for a no call.
Yeah, because that's the thing. That's what I was saying. You had to call something.
So, what are you left with? Yeah. And the answer is not a walk.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's not a walk.
No. I mean, you just stop and think about it. And I think this is a good one to talk about on our show this morning for a minute, because we're not, as fans listening, you're not emotionally invested. That's the problem. We see a lot of these plays in Arkansas games, and we get emotionally invested and emotionally tied up. And I guarantee if that had happened in an Arkansas game, a lot of you out there that might be agreeing with what we're talking about now would not be agreeing, because it's not your team.
Yeah.
And now it's not your team, so you can kind of see it objectively. These are the things that officials see every night. Official, I know y'all think it's all a big conspiracy and the league office is telling them who's got it. That ain't the way it is.
It is.
I was getting tweets last night from, about that, more evidence that the league is corrupt. No, that is a correct call and an easy call.
Well,
and you just have to understand there are rules to the game and certain rules apply, like being a legal defender. And if you're an offensive player, you have a choice. He could have pulled up somewhere else for a shot. He could have went around him. And I know time was a consideration there. But the offensive player didn't have to go through the defender.
Yeah. That's the thing is, if you look at the play, and I just think that a lot of those Ole Miss fans, they don't have the ability for that replay, at least in the way that you do watching television. Maybe they played it back up on the big screen, but when you see your coach lose their minds, like, that adds fuel to the fire, too, because then they're like, oh, it must have been a horrible call if Kermit Davis is losing his mind that way. And then this is the second time in an SEC game this year where things have been thrown on the court. Like, you had the Georgia game where someone threw a stuffed animal. Now you got Ole Miss fans.
Yeah, they were throwing trash and stuff.
Man, they were throwing trash in their hats and stuff. And it's just like, okay, I have a feeling that the SEC is probably going to have to address this issue if it continues, because both call, like, I know that Georgia was just one little item. This ended up looking like somebody just recorded a hat trick in a hockey game, and people were tossing their hats onto the court. Yeah. That's what it looked like for Ole Miss. I'm sure that'll be addressed as well. But I mean, it's definitely one of these things that, like, when you take your own I don't say agenda, but if you take your fanhood out of it, if it's not dealing with Arkansas, like you said, an objective game where you don't really care one way or the other. If you really look at this play, folks, I mean, it was a charge. It was a good call by the official.
It's a charge 30 feet from the rim. Now, I just don't know how you look at it any different than you would a play 8 feet from the rim.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You can't. And I give kudos to that official that made that call, because that's not an easy call to make, especially in that situation. I can't imagine how difficult it is to have it at the very end of the end of the game.
Watching the video, it's Pat Adams who makes the call, and I know how some Arkansas fans feel about Pat, but veteran official in the league, and I don't know how two or three Final Fours he's been involved in. I mean, he's not a guy that's just kind of roaming around college basketball. This is a guy that's worked at the highest levels and been there on the final weekend of college basketball a couple times. I know how certain people feel about Pat because they don't like some of the things that have went on in Arkansas games, but he's a very good official.
Yeah.
And by the way, Arkansas's own Owen Short was one of the other officials on that game as well. So,
is that the guy from Mall Mel or whatever?
He had to deal with Kermit Davis in the jacket trick over there, you know.
Jeez, that guy needs to get, like, invest in some type of special shirt.
Well, I mean, listen, that's what he's going to do. You know, he needs, like, one of them wicking shirts.
Yeah, like, that was gross, man. Like, if you got that going on, you got a problem.
But, I mean, I understand his reaction to the play, but, you know, there's a penalty for that reaction. So.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah, I know. It was just a crazy ending to another crazy game in the SEC.
But it doesn't prove that. Some people think that there's this just grand conspiracy. Do you really think, I mean, just stop and think about that. Do you really think you could cover that up? Do you really think that, you know, that this could go on for years or decades, that the league office is telling people, you know, it's just crazy. Tim Donaghy and two other guys, I don't know if you've read this recent piece from ESPN on kind of reliving that 10 years later, they couldn't keep it quiet in a very small group.
Yeah.
About fixing games. Yeah. Do you think that this mass conspiracy could really be going on to fix games? I mean, come on, guys. Yeah. That's fan talk.
Follow the show on Twitter at HitThatLineAR. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Now he does a tightrope back. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're in number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hogs!
We had some fun with an audio clip yesterday of Mike Anderson having a fiery conversation or back and forth, whatever you want to call it, with a reporter there after the Kentucky game and Kentucky loss. It wasn't very quality, but we found a better quality one, so I just wanted to play that real quick for everybody to really get a better idea of exactly how this exchange went.
With your team coming in on a 5-game losing streak, coming into one of the toughest places in the country, what were you all trying to get out of a game like this?
A win. I mean, you got anything else to that question? Were you really serious about that? I'll give it back to him. Were you serious about that? I mean, what were we trying to get? What were we trying to get? Consistency, I think, for 40 minutes. I think we played games where we played, you know, good for 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And so to elaborate on what you were talking about, we were coming. We played to win.
I was wondering, like, what were you guys trying to, like, learn from a game like this? You know, just something like
learn. Next question.
Learn.
We trying to learn. We went on to the next question. Ty, did we ever find out who that reporter was or anything like
Tom
that?
Tom said it was just a young Kentucky reporter, so I don't know if it was a student or if it was just a young guy that didn't know what he was doing at this point. Well, kind of like me. Like, it's probably just – you just blame it. Like, every time I screw up,
I just –
It was
the Ty Richardson of Kentucky.
Exactly. Yeah. So every time I screw up, I just say, Tommy, it's your own fault. You hired a stupid millennial.
Oh, well, see, that's – well, what's funny is that, you know, that I've seen that happen just even in a Mike Anderson press conference. You get these, you know, student reporters trying to – you know, make their way, and it's intimidating when you ask a question like that. But just when it comes to those types of things, man, that was a great reaction though by Mike Anderson. And you know, the situation that he finds himself in right now is just one that, first off, he's never been in before. Right? Can you that? Because here's the thing: Mike Anderson's never been truly on a hot seat ever. I mean, he always was at UAB. He really took the program from where they were, which was nowhere. Took him into an NCAA tournament team that was making it three times. Went to Missouri, took over a program that was just in ashes, it seemed like. I mean, they had all these recruiting issues and some NCAA allegations, all that stuff. He comes in, elevates them. And then he comes to Arkansas, and you know, this is really, I know that there's been other times where people haven't been too big of a fan of Mike or thought that they, you know, there needed to be a change earlier, but this is the first time that Mike's really legitimately had his feet to the fire on people wanting a serious change. And so seeing how he's handling it, which I'm not saying this is vindictive of how he's handling it, but, you know, he's always been able to punch back. He's always been able to, when his back's against the wall, when everyone's counting him out, he's fought back and he's found a way. But I just don't know how he'll be able to find his way out of the issues that they're in right now. I don't know how what realistic option that he has. He can, because before he had recruiting class, he went to the JUCO route and said, I'm going to sign the number one, the number two, and the number four JUCO guys and come in and have them help me right away, which they did, with Daryl Macon and Jalen Barford. And, of course, I know Orlando Cook was in there too, but he went out and did that. He went out and got Daniel Gafford. He went out and got those guys that were able to add to the mix and really add to their team and make them into a perennial NCAA tournament team. But there's none of those guys coming as of right now. So I just don't know if Mike's going to stay another year, if Mike's going to be the guy, which, again, I think that he's going to get at least one more year. He's going to be back next season. I just don't know what he's going to be able to do and how he's going to be able to overcome this and how he's going to find himself out of this. He always has before, but I don't know how he's going to find his way out.
Yeah. I mean, winning's the only way out, right? It's always the answer is winning. So, and to me, there's just some critical games. That A&M game did not help matters at all, particularly being at home. I think you got to make up for it with this Ole Miss game. You can't lose on the road to Vanderbilt. You don't want to give Vanderbilt their maybe one and only win in conference play. There's just some of these games, you're not going to win them all, but you got to win some of these games you're expected to win down the stretch to make a case for yourself.
Yeah, you have to. And I think that with Mike Anderson and just how he's handling all this pressure, I think he's going to just stay the course and do what he's going to do the rest of the season. I don't think that the team has given up on him, because that's the thing, too, is that you can always kind of see writing on the wall when it looks like the team's mailed it in and the team's not giving efforts and the body language is horrible. You haven't really seen that, at least by and large, from this team. They've really gone out there and they've still played their game. They've still played really hard. And that's also at least a good indication that he hasn't lost the team. Because I don't think he's gotten to that point where he's lost the team. Like you've seen with other coaches, like when Brett Bielema lost the team. And it was very evident that he lost it. Mike Anderson hasn't done that yet. It's just a matter of, okay, so what adjustments are going to be made for next season? What are you going to do? You know you're losing your best player, your best big man down low. You don't have really any big-time recruits coming in as of right now. But I know that Nick actually alluded to this, which hopefully we get him back on next week if he can find some time to recover from his injury. But when we get him back on, he's discussed a lot of times how this roster is going to look completely different next year, where they're, as a coaching staff, are going to suggest to maybe some of these players, hey, we maybe need to part ways. Maybe need to find some other place to play. Maybe you need to find some better place to play. I don't know what particular players those are going to be, but I wouldn't be surprised if that happens to open up some scholarships and open up some spots for guys that they want to bring in right away. Maybe they go back to that JUCO route, try to bring in some of the big-time JUCO players. I think that'd be a smart move. But time is running out. You can't afford to rebuild and have a couple of years to get back to it. It's got to be do or die right now. And it's bad right now, but next season, you have to make the NCAA tournament or you will not be around the next season. I think that it's in that dire of a situation right now, Tommy.
No, I think his back is definitely to the wall in the way you laid it out there. And, yeah, he's setting up a do-or-die season next year with the results this year, because he's using up a lot of credit with the fan base and probably a new administration. If I'm Hunter Yurecek, I've got to ask myself, though, what will one more year do for me? Because if you're not very hopeful that next year is going to be much better with this roster and with the recruits coming in, does that make the case for change now? Or, I mean, at what point do you say, hey, we're just going to kick the can down the road 12 more months? You know, know what I'm saying? It is, because I don't think you or I or many are that have paid a lot of attention to, and there's not a big bunch of players coming in. We know Gafford's leaving. Now, things could change with players transferring or whatever. But there's not two or three players that are on the way that are going to be saviors for the program. So I still wonder, how is next year going to be a different story in a league that seems to continue to improve?
Yeah, maybe something happens here in the offseason. Maybe they have some guys transfer out and they bring in some guys out of nowhere. I don't know.
But, you know, Hunter Yurecek's still a mystery, at least to me, as far as how he is going to handle these type of deals. I mean, he really didn't have a whole lot to do with the hiring of Chad Morris, and we haven't seen him make any coaching changes since he's arrived on campus. We're starting to see some staff changes with his administrative staff, but, you know, that doesn't really give you a lot of insight to how he's going to handle one of the major three sports when it comes to who's going to coach the teams.
Yeah. Well, and do you agree with me, too, that as far as the decision that Hunter Gearcheck has, that he's already got his mind made up. It's not like he's waiting for the next couple of games to say, all right, let's see what he does here. I think that if he's going to keep him, he's going to keep him no matter what. And if he's going to let him go, he's going to let him go no matter what at this point in time.
Are you asking me if Hunter Gearcheck's already made up his mind?
Well, yeah, I'm saying that.
I have no idea.
Well, no, I'm saying that if you're Hunter Gearcheck, though, I don't think that in the next four games there's going to be anything that happens that changes your mind. I don't think you're sitting on the fence right now.
Better question.
Right. Okay. I don't think you're sitting on the fence right now and saying that, okay, well, let me see what he does against Ole Miss and then I'll decide. I don't think that that's happening right now.
If I'm in that position, I've seen enough one way or the other. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying.
I'm with you.
Okay. So, yeah, we're on.
But I'm going to tell you, you're on, what, a six-game losing streak?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of these games down the stretch, as we mentioned before the top of the hour, you've got to win. I mean, you cannot lose to Vanderbilt. And you really got to win, I think, against Ole Miss and Alabama both at home because they're home games. And you're just expected to win in Bud Walton Arena. That's the thing that's most frustrating and the thing that just pisses me off more than anything else is Bud Walton Arena is no longer a home court edge. You know, and that used to be the one thing you could really hang your hat on, even in average years, when you were just an average team. By golly, you come to Bud Walton Arena, and it was going to be a place you probably couldn't get out of here with a win, even if you were a really good team that year. And they just can't seem to do it at Bud Walton anymore. That's the thing is, you know, people are not going to fear, if this keeps up, people aren't going to fear Bud Walton the way it has been feared in the past.
Yeah. No,
that's the thing that I think you got to win these last two at home.
Well, because if you don't, you go 10-8 in the season at Bud Walton Arena. 10-8. Like that's not going to get anybody excited.
Say that again.
10-8
at home. 10-8. You lost eight games under what we're talking about here.
Yeah, in that situation, eight games.
So you guys don't think if Mike Anderson was to lose these next three games and then get knocked out first round of the SEC tournament, and Hunter Gearcheck had already made up his mind that he was keeping him after his eighth season, you don't think he would be changed even the slightest bit?
No.
I hope that's not the case because I don't think that you – listen, you got to look at body of work. You can't look at next three games and decide. You got to look at body work in the future.
But I'm looking at the last six too.
Well, I know, and that's what I'm saying. You can't look at just what's going on in the next few games. You got to look at the whole body of work. You got to look at what's going on.
But that's what I'm asking. One of the reasons that Brett Bielema was let go is not only did they continue to lose the same way, but how they lost in the latter part of games. So if Mike Anderson was to lose, and I don't think this is going to happen, but if he was going to lose 10 straight to end the 2019 basketball season, I think it's very, I mean, like body of work or not, is that not a question for if he needs to be fired or not? If he loses 10 straight to end the season?
I'm not disagreeing with you because I think that in that case, yes. But my whole point with this with Hunter Gearcheck is, though, is that you're hoping not, because we don't know where he's at. We don't know what's in his mind. But you're hoping that he's not just sitting there on the fence and not having anything in his mind of what he's going to do and just say, okay, I'm going to see how the next four games play out and then I'll make a decision. It's you want him to say, okay, I have something in mind. Because the last thing, because if you say if he's like, okay, I'm going to wait these four games and they lose those four games and then he fires them. Like, you're going to have to, you should already, if you're going to fire him, you should already have it moving in your mind of who you're going after, your options, what change you're going to make, how's this going to be done. Like, you want to be able to have a plan in place already and be working on it. That's my whole thing. But again, this is a thing that we don't know much about Hunter Gearcheck. We don't know where his mindset's at. We could be completely wrong about this, but we're just saying that if we are Hunter Gearcheck, we should hopefully have our decisions made on what we're going to do when we're already putting our plan in place right now.
Subscribe to Hit That Line on iTunes. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas. 80 yards.
Let's continue to talk a little recruiting as we welcome in Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Good morning, Richard. How you doing, man?
Doing good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, as always, we appreciate you coming on. And there's always things going on with recruiting, and I know we're going to get to a lot of it with you. But I want to start with this whole Nick Starkel thing, because this is a visit that he's taking officially this weekend. We know that Chad Morris has said previously how he's always going to be in the quarterback market. What is that situation looking like? What is he looking for? Do you have any updates on it? Just tell us the overall situation with Nick Starkel and his visit this weekend.
Yeah, I actually talked to Nick the other night, and all I can say is that I've talked to a lot of young men over the years, and he's about as impressive as they come. You can tell he's a guy that definitely a leader, and a guy that doesn't mind leading his team and being a guy that the team looks towards for leadership. And anyway, just talking to him, the previous relationship that he's had with the coaching staff's huge. I think there's a lot of trust there. I think he sees the offense as being a good fit for him. And he likes the possibility of playing in the SEC again. I think that's huge. So I think Arkansas is sitting pretty good with him right now. He's arriving 7:30 tonight for the start of his official visit. So he'll be there Thursday, Friday, and leave on Saturday. He still has a visit scheduled for Florida State on the 29th of March. Like I said, I think things are looking good for Arkansas. But, you know, this visit obviously will go a long ways towards seeing if he becomes a Razorback or not.
Richard, a couple of days ago, you wrote about Arkansas' second commitment for the 2020 class, a cornerback out of New Orleans. Tell us more about Jamie Vance.
Yeah, he's a guy. He kind of reminds me of Greg Brooks, who's already on campus. Similar size, similar speed. Just when you look at him on film, both very, very athletic, you know, corners that look like they definitely can play in the SEC level. Obviously, with Arkansas and several others offering me, he's a guy that one thing that I've noticed with this staff that they're not afraid to go out. Evaluate, trust their own judgment, and throw out an offer, and then other schools I see follow suit. I've seen that several times in the 2020 class, and I think this is the case with Jamie. I think you're going to see a guy that possibly this spring is going to blow up even more. So he's got a pretty good offer list now, but I think Arkansas jumped on him early. And obviously, he's from Edna Carr High School in New Orleans. That's the same school that Devin Bush went to. That I think the comfort factor of, you know, knowing somebody that's already on campus and knowing he also knows Gregory Brooks and Joe Fouché. So, you know, when you're 17, 18 years old and you're thinking about going away from to college, it's always good to have some friends or familiar faces around, and it kind of makes that transition from high school to college much easier. But good pickup, and Arkansas's got two right now, and I think probably next weekend you'll probably see some movement there too, maybe an additional commitment or two, because they're going to have a very impressive list of kids coming in next weekend. Probably one of the biggest weekends in Arkansas history as far as the number of quality prospects coming in. But right now, you know, the staff's doing some work. There's no doubt about it. Very impressive early results.
Speaking with Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette right now on the Morning Rush. Richard, something we alluded to as well is the director of recruiting that Arkansas is looking for. There's been some rumors coming around that it might be Larry McDaniel, who's the assistant director of recruiting at Texas A&M right now. Nothing official, nothing confirmed. Do you know any more about that situation or any other people that people are going to be looking at? Just what's that looking like for the director of recruiting?
Yeah, definitely that name is Larry's. The name's been associated with the job, and sounds like things are moving forward there. Obviously, he had a lot to do with Texas A&M's class. This past class, one of the best ones in the country, top five class. So everything that I've heard about him is very positive. And, you know, nothing's official, but looks like that's the direction it's heading.
Richard, just talking a little basketball. I know it's a big week for high school teams around the state. State tournaments going on in six different spots. Who you got your eye on this week as state tournaments continue today?
Well, Jalen Williams from Fort Smith Northside. Obviously, all the fans of Arkansas want to know what Arkansas is doing for bigs, and obviously they're they're looking at the 2019 class, but if you're looking for the 2020 class, Jalen's one to keep an eye on. I think he had a pretty good night last night. I can't remember. Dudley was at his game last night. I forget what he tweeted out for his final numbers, but I think he's above 20. But you know, obviously he's one to keep an eye on. And it's always fun watching guys perform in on the big stage, and that's when you got to do it if you're a primetime player.
And Richard, obviously, we already mentioned a few of the recruits that they have committed, a couple of them for the 2020 class, and they're going to be looking forward to as well. As far as what they've been able to do so far, and is there any reason why you don't expect this next recruiting class or even the recruiting class after that to be just as good, maybe even better than what it was this past year? Because I think that's everyone's concern about recruiting is, yeah, it's great this past season. It was great, and you're hoping it goes that way. But is there any reason for you to believe that it won't continue to be as successful as it is right now for Chad Morris in Arkansas?
No, not at all, because, this past class, they had a full year of developing relationships. Now they've the 2020 class, they've had 2 years of basically trying to develop relationships with these kids. And I think the list of kids that I got more than 40 kids listed for next weekend, and all of them have multiple Power 5 offers. Some of them are very, very highly recruited. And to be able to get that many kids on campus for 1 day or for the weekend is almost unheard of for Arkansas. And that's the thing that really impresses me about this staff. It's one thing about recruiting kids, but it's another thing about getting them on campus. And they do an excellent job of doing that. And that's the number one priority, get them on campus. And then if you get them on campus, you got a shot. They were able to close on several of the guys last year. That first weekend, back in February of last year, they had about 40, 50 kids, and about 10, 11 of those kids eventually signed with them in the 2019 class. So I think next weekend is going to go a long ways towards what we see a finished product in the 2020 class.
Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Great stuff as always, Richard. Appreciate you joining us, man. Have a great weekend. Try to stay warm and stay safe out there, man. And hopefully we'll be catching up with you next Thursday, all right?
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.